The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So there's a topic I want to talk about. It's on my mind, and so it's kind of nice for me at least to talk about. Hopefully it's nice for you. As I was thinking about talking about it, it kind of occurred to me, I think maybe I talked about this pretty recently. So if I did, maybe I'll do it in a different way today. And those of you might have heard it. And the topic is resolve. And it can be considered a useful quality to have in engaging in spiritual practice. And so that's what I want to talk about a little bit, the role of resolve. Resolve is can be seen as a variation of intention, or it's that which takes our intentions and is the bridge between having an intention and acting on the intention. Because it's easy to have an intention and not do anything. And some of us can have lots of intentions, but nothing comes of them. Some people are kind of fascinated or alarmed by how they can have wishes and desires, intentions, and no follow-through. And why is that? Some people who want to meditate, they're very motivated to meditate, and that's their intention, but then they don't ever show up to meditate. They never do it. Or they do meditate, and there may be a very important intention for them to. It's like the maybe important part of their spiritual life. Their spiritual life is the most important part of their life. They really feel this is important, and they've kind of cleared the calendar. They finally figured out to meditate. They finally, you know, intend to sit and finally connect to that which is most important to them. And then they sit down to meditate. They start thinking about what they want to have for dinner, and you know, the plans for tomorrow, and you know, their high school sweetheart, and what happened to the intention? There's just this very serious intention, but somehow that intention gets hijacked or gets sidetracked by surface chatter of the mind or deep chatter of the mind. And somehow it would seem the intention that was so important, there was no follow-through in terms of really sitting and meditating in a way that would qualify rather than daydreaming. I learned through my years that intention is one of the most important qualities to pay attention to, or to nurture and tend. And because intention is at the root of how we want to live our lives, how we intend, what we want, what we wish. And to spend some time reflecting on what our intentions are makes for a much richer life, and it makes for a kind of a conscious life, a life that we live consciously, deliberately, in a certain way. And to spend some time reflecting on intention, and the particular reflection I think is most valuable, is to reflect on what is your deepest intention? What's the most important intention around which you want to orient your life? There's many, many things a person can do with life, many of them which are very worthwhile, and some people spread themselves quite thin. And maybe they have too many things that they want to do. And also, without any deep self-reflection and having something which is at the root of it, at the base of it, that really informs what we do or gives meaning to it or purpose to it. And everything we do can have an intention behind it. Probably everything we do has one, but it hasn't been consciously thought about. So, for example, I could go shopping for food at the grocery store, and it wouldn't occur to me to think about my intention. Just, you know, we're out of milk for the kid, so I'm going to the store to get milk. And so, you know, that's fine. I get the milk. I've done something maybe nice, and end of the story. But I could also consider, what is my deepest intention? Or how do I infuse this simple thing of going to the grocery store with my deep intention? What's most important for me? And it doesn't take long to reflect that one of the values I want is to be able to be generous and loving for my family, and to create an environment that's supportive of my kid to grow up in. And to get milk doesn't have to just be get milk because we're out of milk in the refrigerator. But I could go to milk very consciously aware that this is going to express my care for my family. I could go to the grocery store and constantly reflect, I'd like going to the grocery store to reflect other values I have. I'd like to have values of friendliness, of being able to meet people and care for the people I encounter. Because I've noticed that I could easily go to the grocery store and not look at anyone, not even think about anybody who's there, even the checkout person, you know, like, you know, by the time I get to my line, gets up the checkout person, I'm already concerned about leaving, let alone saying, not, you know, saying hello and, you know, noticing it's a person there. So to go to the store with the intention, I want to go there to the store and try to make a difference for someone's life so that my shopping, what I do, makes it better, a little bit better for someone. And so I go there with these different intentions. And because I have those intentions, it becomes a richer experience, becomes a more valuable experience than just going to the store to get to fill our refrigerator. And this is very important because when we act on those intentions, and here we're I'm talking about an intention that you add intentions to what you're already going to do anyway, you're actually benefiting yourself if your intentions are wholesome, if your intentions are good intentions. It enriches you. It kind of like stretches and opens your heart in the way. It kind of gives you positive feedback of the value of walking into the world in a loving and a caring and a friendly way. It reinforces that capacity you have. And imagine that. It kind of, you begin associating grocery stores with places of spiritual practice, which is good, right? Then you don't have to come to IMC. You can get it anywhere you go. But more important that, so you can infuse all the daily things you do with added intention that hopefully is sincere, and you'll grow and benefit from it. Also, by doing that, you're kind of giving conscious direction to doing wholesome things, rather than casually doing something and letting your mind wander freely and do whatever it wants. And the wandering, idle mind sometimes is not so wholesome. Sometimes doesn't think things that support you and betters you, but rather sometimes what you randomly kind of casually think without paying any attention can undermine you. And so by giving thought to your intention that you want to infuse into what you do, it's also beginning to kind of train the mind or save the mind from being involved in thoughts and ideas which are not helpful overall. This doesn't have to be a big, cumbersome exercise. I find it kind of a very simple thing to do, to kind of give some thought to what I'm about to do and how I'd like to see myself in it, the results I'd like to see, and whether it works out or not to do that, going to the grocery store, that I was friendly to people and, you know, a little bit kinder and more supportive, or if I thought about my love for my family as I did it. If I thought about it, you know, if I don't think about it again, probably it's not much damage. It's kind of like a risk-free thing to do. But there could be a lot of benefit. And chances are more benefit than if I go without giving some thought and consciousness to what I'm doing. So part of a mindful life is to bring more intentionality to what we do, to be more conscious and deliberate in a certain way what we do, rather than just kind of wandering around and doing whatever we want. So within that category of looking at our intentions then, there's also looking at our deepest intentions. What's the thing you most want your life to be about? Is there one thing or a couple of things that really are the organizing principle around which you want to live your life? And I think that not enough people spend quality time reflecting on what is the deepest intention that I want to live my life by? What's the deepest intention that I want to do my work, have a profession? What's the deepest intention by which I want to live a family life or live a community life? And so if we don't have that kind of questioning and thinking, it's all too easy to do things on automatic pilot. It's all too easy to accept the values or the ideas of our society around us, why we should do things. It's easy to do things because we just want to be safe and comfortable, rather than really kind of have some kind of deeper wellspring of goodness and richness in our life that can come from when we look at why we do things. I spent a year of my life every morning reflecting on what my deepest intention was for that day. And it was a very valuable exercise to do for a year, because what I found was that I found a number of things out during that time. One was, if I stated my intention, my deep intention, in the negative, I had more work to do. It was interesting to go further. So what I mean by the negative was, I would like to live without any fear. That's nice. People have a lot of fear. I used to have fear. So to live without fear sounds like a pretty good intention to have. But it's stated in the negative, to live without fear. So then I would ask myself, well, Gil, if you can live without fear, then what would be your intention be? Well, then I get a different answer. Then it's to live with love. Now, which would you rather live? A desire to live without fear or a desire to live with love? I think that you get both if you prefer love, because love kind of maybe hopefully kind of takes care of the fear thing. So I found that if I, sometimes I would answer in the negative and I would go further to see what else, what is my deepest intention, until I came to a kind of positive statement. The other thing I found was that I would have one answer for a while, but because I kept asking the question, it would go deeper and deeper. And I would find new things and new things and new things. And a variation of this that I did for a while was asking my question. I got up in the morning and I would ask myself, if I knew I was going to die tonight, by the end of the day, how would I spend this day? And that was related to this question of my deepest intention, because that would force me to look at what was most important for me to do. How would I want to live this day here now? And it really benefited me, because then those intentions and the ideas of how to live kind of came alive for me in that day, the following day. And one of the things it did for me is it helped bring me into the present moment much more often, because it was here in the present moment that these values and these intentions had the most life. And maybe that's partly because for me, the intentions that I had were intentions about how to live, not what to acquire. So it was like, and how I lived was something that I was living now. So how do I want to live? Do I want to live with less fear? Do I want to live with love? Do I want to live with generosity? Do I want to live with a sense of freedom and openness? Do I want to live and really be present for this life that I'm living? So I found it very helpful to do these reflections and to think. That kind of deepened me or opened me or supported me a lot. But I also learned that it was to put those intentions or to really live those intentions, they were supported by resolve. And resolve, it gives more oomph, more power, more. It's like a resolve. Another word for resolve is determination. So it's one thing to have an intention. The other thing is to be determined to follow through. But I like the word resolve. And the reason I really very fond of the English word resolve is that there's a kind of a dual meaning in resolve. You can resolve a problem, and you can resolve to do something. The first one means you solve something. And the second means that you're determined to do something. So I like to think that when I use the word resolve, I'm using it in both senses of the word. That there's both a sense of determination, but it's not going to be stressful determination, because built into the resolve is the idea of relaxing, of dissolving. And as a, you know, for me, one of the most important intentions is freedom, liberation, not being caught up in attachments and clinging, and which is a form of, in Buddhism they talk about breaking the bonds or untying the knots that we have. And the word solve comes from the Latin word to untie, which is very nice, right? So when you dissolve something, it goes into the solution. So I like to say that when you practice mindfulness or Buddhism, some of your problems are not going to be solved. They're going to be dissolved. And so they say this wonderful wordplay, I think, with the word, you know, Latin root. So to be resolved, when I think of resolve then, for me, built into the word is a protection from getting tight or striving too much or getting kind of pushing or kind of too serious about what I'm resolved at. And so you have to remember to be relaxed, to help me soften and untie as well. So so to be resolved. Now, the Buddha suggested four resolves that are worth having. Four intentions, I suppose. And the first one, and in Thailand, I've been told that these four Buddhist resolves have entered into the popular culture. And so when anybody's involved with any serious endeavor, they apparently, or some the idea is you would look at how are these four resolves applied or come into life around this endeavor. So the first resolve is to be resolved on truth. So to be truthful in whatever you're going to do. To have truth be kind of the one of the foundations. And I think it's having that intention and the resolve to be truthful is something that's well worth having at the center of a person's life. It makes a lot, person's life more transparent, more open. It lends itself to being much more relaxed and open as you go through life because you have less to defend, less to pretend. You can just kind of help yourself just be who you are. And if who you are is not something you want to show people and it's your fault, then maybe you want to work and find out what's going on. Take a deep look. If you don't want to show who you are because it's their fault, then, you know, help them. You know. But the idea of being able to relax and become ourselves is part of this thing of being true. The second is wisdom, to be resolved on wisdom. To be resolved to try to understand this life that we're living more deeply. To take the time to, and the idea of wisdom in Buddhism is not acquired wisdom, like knowledge that you carry with you, but rather as an ability to be discerning in the present. So if you're going to engage in something, you want to spend some time looking at it carefully, reflecting on it, being present for it, kind of looking at the context and the picture and the details, spending time getting to know it. That's how wisdom arises. You don't go to a manual to find, you know, all the answers to your life. But there's an art of learning how to be discerning and be resolved. Let me look at this. Let me take a time to learn what's going on here. A simple way of doing this that I find helpful in many circumstances is not to rush into talking, not to rush into doing or deciding something, but to pause and wait. Sometimes in a conversation, just pausing can be 3 seconds. And then it allows something else to happen. It allows us to notice and understand and take in more information rather than rushing into what we have to say. And on the other end of the extreme, sometimes I find I'll wait months to do certain things, waiting until I understand better the situation and take in the information for what's happening there and kind of studying, thinking about it, waiting until something comes together that it seems like the right time. So resolved on truth, resolved on wisdom. And the third resolve is a word which has a dual meaning. And I like to think of it as generosity, to be resolved on being generous. There's something very significant personally and socially in the act of generosity. Generosity can never be obligatory, because then it might be giving, but it's not generosity. Generosity arises from some goodness in our hearts. It arises from a free will place of kind of a virtuous place inside. And it's a kind of a place that supports us, that nourishes us, that feeds what's good in us. In part because generosity is an act of relinquishment, of giving something. And that movement of giving out, opening our hands and handing something, requires us to let go of holding on and clinging and being miserly and here, you can have this. It's a beautiful movement. It also is a movement of our social connection to others, and in that it's not obligatory generosity. It's a way of relating to people in a way that people really like. They feel their care, the love, something that goes on there. So to be resolved on generosity in everything we do. So it's not just me, myself, and mine, what we do, but what's a generous thing here while I do this activity? But the word, the ancient word is chaga, also means relinquishment. And sometimes Buddhists like to emphasize the value of relinquishment more than generosity. Because it's kind of the other side of the coin, perhaps. But relinquishment has more to do with the freeing of ourselves than it does with the act of giving. And what's, I think, lovely is the two go hand in hand. You can both relinquish and be generous at the same time, both things which support us. The fourth resolve is the resolve on peace, to be peaceful. How can you be peaceful, at ease in your heart, in your mind, in your body? Do you see it as a valuable thing to have some peace? Some of the ways that I have been most, I like right now, I like the word fed. Like my heart, deepest part of my hearts have been fed, was through experiences of peace. It's a way of feeling deeply at home, feeling connected, feeling certainly safe. But there's something about the space in the heart that peace creates that just feels like it's filled with goodness or rightness or just feels so deeply satisfying. I think one of the first times that I was really powerfully affected by peace was going into a little chapel deep inside of a big monastery in France. It was a 1,000-year-old little stone chapel. And I walked in there, and it was such a profoundly peaceful place that I felt transformed. I just stood there kind of in amazement and just like drinking it in, this peace, and it seemed to go in really deeply. And then eventually I began finding it in meditation. I didn't have to go to chapels in France to be peaceful, and found that I could have a profound sense of peace in meditation. And that was nice. But what was more important was that this sense of peace and ease that I found internally has become a standard or become a reference point for me about how I want to live my life, and a reference point to notice when I get caught, when I get contracted. And if I'm going to suffer, I'll get contracted. So if I can feel that loss and that agitation, because of that peace, I recognize it more quickly. And because I'm resolved on peace, or I value it so much, I'm not going to let myself go too far into the world of agitation. I'm not going to let myself get contracted, because it's hard for me to imagine that anything is important enough to give up my peace for. And, you know, that, you know, partly because anything I do when I'm agitated, I don't do it as well as when I'm peaceful. And there's really good arguments that probably you'll come up with about why it's necessary for you to give up your ease and peace. Because what you're doing is so important, so desperate, so crucial. And, and you have to kind of sacrifice yourself to take care of all these things and get agitated and do things. It's a radical thing to be resolved on peace and question whether any of the things that you choose to do are worth doing if it, you lose yourself, lose your peace here. And one of the reasons people are willing to sacrifice their inner sense of well-being and peace, whatever degree they have, for other concerns that seem so important, is because they don't have confidence that it's possible to take care of our life from a peaceful place. And so this being resolved on peace is to run the experiment. Have enough commitment to it that you're willing to kind of experiment and see, can you find out how to do something while you're staying in a somewhat relaxed state of being? And as I said earlier, I suggest that we actually do things better when we're relaxed. I give you what occurs to me as a little example is sometimes I'm in a hurry to type an email or hurry to do something typing on the computer. And it always takes longer when I hurry, because I end up making a lot of mistakes, and then I have to go back and delete and type it over again. So, you know, it seems like I have to do this. It's so important. Get it done. I have important things to do. I have to go on to the next thing. Go back and fix it. So four resolves: the resolve on truth, the resolve on wisdom, the resolve on generosity, and the resolve on peace. These are suggestions the Buddhist tradition has about four things that are very well be resolved on, to be determined to do. And they're wonderful because they can be applied to almost any endeavor that you're involved in, so that you do those with those four qualities as part of it. And if you have the intention or the resolve to add those to going to the grocery store or going to work or going anywhere you go, then you're going to enhance what you're doing in all kinds of valuable ways. And you'll bring into the picture deep, important values, your own goodness, and your own capacity to begin changing to become a better person and happier person. So I suggest you try it, that you don't just go along as business as usual. If business as usual and automatic pilot and just getting things done is not infused with some deeper sense of values and purpose and intentionality, when it's free to do it, it just takes a little bit of thought and consideration to add it to what you do. And if you do, the hope is that what you do helps you, in the best possible senses of the word, helps you dissolve. Dissolves all your tension and all your contraction and all your fears, and helps you untie the resolve that resolves all things. So that's what I had in my mind today. And we have 10 minutes. If anyone would like any questions or offer testimonials on intention or resolve or anything, you're welcome to take the mic and say something.
So when one reduces one's actions to the deepest intention, that often raises the stakes of any small task that one has before himself. So how do you balance getting at that deep intention while also not making a big project out of getting the milk, for example?
Getting a big project out of?
Getting the milk, for example, or whatever mundane task there might be before you.
Well, this exercise of considering what your deepest intentions are and really reflect on it kind of presupposes that you can kind of go searching or kind of going deeper in layers and layers, but keep asking yourself. And I think it's a good thing to do and put aside time to do it. You know, it doesn't have to be long, but, you know, 10 minutes a day, or if you're driving to work, maybe you do it during that drive. Or maybe, you know, if you go for a walk, or lay in bed, if you wake up and lay in bed before getting up out of bed. Or, you know, if you do meditate every morning, that's a great time right afterwards. Spend maybe 5 minutes just sitting, having tea, looking out the window and reflecting on it. So I think giving yourself, you know, really a conscious time to reflect on the deepest intention question is a good one. But the grocery store thing, you know, it's, you know, there too, you know, if you're on your, usually people are on their way to the grocery store. They don't find themselves at the grocery store when they have to buy groceries. So there's that time of going there. Probably it's a perfectly good time to think about what you want to do, what the intentions you want to have. I mean, it's kind of free time. I mean, chances are most people are not doing super productive things on the way to the grocery store. That can't, you know, you can't spend some time thinking about it. Is this answering your question, or it was a little different, your question?
My question was a little bit different.
Yeah, try again, please.
Yeah, okay, no problem. So you want to create a nourishing environment for your kid.
Yeah.
And part of that might mean getting milk. And you realize there's no more milk at this grocery store. And so you spent some time considering your deepest intention, and it was foiled.
Oh.
So how do you not make a big deal out of that or raise the stakes high for something so small?
Oh, that way. I see. I think that I celebrate having the intention more than the success at it. You know, the fact that we tried to do our best, we had this good intention, that's a great thing. We should celebrate it. And that supports it, you know, in more ways. You know, I think I have this example in my book there, The Issue at Hand, or somewhere, about these two people who, you know, started a company together and ran the company together. And one of them's intention in having the company was to just make a lot of money. You know, just that's the whole purpose, and everything was about doing that. The other person's intention, the partner's intention, was to create a friendly, loving, supportive environment for the employees. And while the company lasted, they succeeded at the first one well enough. But the company failed, and everyone who was involved got broke. So the one whose intention was to make money just left bitter. The one whose intention was to create a better environment for the fellow was unfortunate we didn't last. But, you know, I have this happiness knowing that for the time when we had this company, we really supported people in a nice way. People liked working here, it was a nice sense of community. So the fact that there's failure, it doesn't mean that goodness hasn't been created and added to the world. So if you came here next week and told us, you know, I went to the grocery store with the intention of really offering a healthy, supportive, loving environment for my family, but they were out of milk. My response would be, wow, I'm so happy to know there's someone who has that nice intention. That kind of improves my day. And then I would wonder, well, did you go to another store then? Now did I answer your question well enough? Okay. Yes.
Can you also then speak to when we have this great intention and then we're not able to meet it, and then let's say there isn't the other store, like how to then sit with that idea that, yeah, we failed in our intention and, you know, like if
I think that, again, the idea of success, at least for me, the idea of really thinking, coming from these intentions that are really good, wholesome, good intentions, it's worthwhile in and of itself to have that. So I think that we don't want to be careful that the idea of success sometimes it depends what we're talking about.
Like if we hurt somebody when we fail at being...
Oh, that's a different question.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So let's say our intention is to be loving, yeah. And then we're not expressing our highest intention of being loving.
Yeah.
And then can you just remind us with wisdom how to...
So if we failed at our highest intention to be loving,
and we hurt someone.
Oh, well, I think you hurt someone. You should then apologize, and you should have some regret, and then I think it's good to look at what you did and see what you can learn from it. The Buddhist ethics is partly we look into the past to learn from it, but then the main thing is we look into the future to see how we could do better. So we don't get weighed down by the thing we've done, but we try to make amends, we try to be committed to not do that again, try to understand what happened. And so then we celebrate the fact that this is a person who made a mistake, but really what they're focusing on is to do better in the future. And, you know, it's you know, so have, you have some regret, but celebrate that you're a kind of person who's trying to do a better life. You don't have to spend much time feeling bad about yourself, because that kind of doesn't help anyone. Does that make some sense to you?
Yes, it's what I, yeah. I've been, yeah.
Yeah, but please ask again if that was in
there. No, that's what I'm aware of. I just was like, oh, what other wisdom is there besides what, yeah. So I just, it's helpful just to repeat that wisdom.
I think if we hurt someone and we feel bad about it, that's a good sign to begin with, that we feel bad about it. That's good. And and then if we are trying to look forward into how to do better, how to make amends, and how to apologize and do these things, those are all beautiful qualities. And so, you know, and we need more of that in our world.
So what if you have more than one intention and they conflict with each other?
Well, that's why you need wisdom.
And what if you don't have that yet? I guess you have to. But yes. Yeah.
You know, the this is for some people it's a bit of a problem having a lot of intentions, because there's a lot of good things to do in the world, but one person can't do them all. And so sometimes part of wisdom is going through and choosing what we most want to do, what seems most valuable or most important, and being willing to put aside things which are important and good and worthwhile, but we can't spread ourselves so thin. So that's part of a wise life, is to go through that and, you know, make those choices. And if you can't make those choices easily, then it might be a time for reflection and to really, really think. And sometimes our life doesn't come, we don't get easy answers. And so part of that is to then spend time reflecting and wondering, journaling, talking to friends, living with the feelings, living with the emotions, and then until some clarity eventually happens. Meditation, something like meditation, can help a lot, because sometimes the clarity doesn't come from our thinking mind, but it comes from deeper inside, from the emotional, physical kind of places inside. Because we have, you know, layers and layers of subconscious activity going on in their minds and our hearts. And that's involved also in these decision making. And so if you're only trying to figure it out logically and rationally, it doesn't allow, you know, then you don't have access to the deeper kind of knowing and clarifying that sometimes needs to happen or can happen that will guide you. The biggest, I think I would say some of the biggest decisions I made in my life, I spent a lot of time thinking about them, reflect on them for months sometimes, and that was an important part of the process. I needed to do that, but the answer didn't come from my thoughts. So I wasn't sitting there watching my thoughts, waiting for the answer to appear. The thinking was kind of like creating the fire, you know, the was cooking something, letting, because I had to stay connected to it. It helped me stay connected to the issue and stayed with it, and then at some point, these deep, the most important decisions I made arose from deep inside my body, and there was just a knowing. Now I know. And then later, because I'm a rational person, later then I gave reasons for that decision. But the knowing came from inside. So it's a way of saying that sometimes you want to spend, if you don't know and you have the luxury to be able to really reflect on it, don't be in a hurry to solve these kind of questions, but it's worth hanging in until some kind of clarity begins to surface. Make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So, I was going to try to stop, but if you think it can be quick, I'll try. We'll try.
Okay. I just have a quick question.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering how one could find this sense of, kind of settle into this sense of peace if they feel like they're kind of just kind of trying to survive or protect themselves.
Yeah, that's a good question. So there are people who live under sometimes really difficult, painful circumstances, oppression and war, and you know, and so to expect them to have peace, you know, in that kind of situation is a high standard. It's very difficult. Sometimes the external world has to change first, and or they have to get out of there or get support or help, for sure. And if the situation allows you to do something like meditate, meditation can develop a certain kind of strength that attention, of mindfulness, where we're not so easily pulled into the world of our thoughts. And if we're not pulled into the world of our thoughts so easily, we know how to let go of them, then it's possible to get a respite from all these lack of safety in the world around us. And so it's, you know, it's a sense of temporary safety for those moments, and learning how to clear out the mind, clear out the heart, learning to find a deeper place to come from, and then maybe have a little more strength and capacity to go and address the issues that need to be addressed. Does that make some sense?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so I would suggest that, if you'd like, that you might spend at least this 1 week spending time reflecting on your deepest intention. Or if you don't want to do your deepest intention, just reflecting extra on the ordinary things you do. What kind of valuable intentions can you infuse these activities with that you normally wouldn't have done? And will that kind of enhance and make for a better, more interesting week? It would be nice to know. Thank you all.